Hello and welcome to the Media Matters podcast, presented by myself, Colette Sexton, news correspondent at the Sunday Business Post. In each episode, we talk to an expert in the media and marketing industry and pick their brain on the topics that matter. I'm joined in studio today by Dr. Martina Byrne, Chief Executive of the Public Relations Institute of Ireland, which has nearly 1,000 members working in public relations and communications. Martina was awarded a PhD in philosophy from Trinity College Dublin in 2014 and subsequently lectured in social science in Trinity and in UCD. Prior to that, she was Director of Public Affairs and a member of the board of Wenzel Hartel PR. During her career in communications, she has worked in both in-house and consultancy roles with international and national clients in the private and public sectors. She also serves as the Chief Executive of the Public Relations Consultants Association. Welcome, Martina.
My pleasure, Colette.
So a lot of people assume that the public relations industry is focused solely on generating media coverage. Is that the case?
I think that was the case historically. And I think what we're finding is that more and more, both with the demands of clients changing and shifting, with the demands of other stakeholders for direct communication between organisations and themselves, and with the fragmentation and diversity of media out there, that a lot of the work that we're doing now is moving towards those kind of channels. Media relations is always going to be a core part of what we do, but the actual day-to-day work of your PR professional is much more diverse than people imagine. It's a lot more actually about thinking and being able to do research and be able to strategize than it is actually about writing press releases and sending them out to journalists.
So us journalists shouldn't assume that PR people can just drop everything when we give them a call or send them an email. Is that the case?
I think PR people will always drop everything and respond to journalists' inquiries or questions. My own sense, I mean, again, there's a perception that that journalists and PR people are sort of always sort of sniping at each other. But in truth, actually, you know, we must function together. We do function together very well. I kind of regard it as a first cousins relationship. And, you know, we would be as invested in there being a strong, independent, secure media as indeed journalists would be. I mean, we'd be very much supporters of Journalism Matters. Without a strong independent media, both as a society and as public relations professionals, we're all in trouble.
Do you think that we have a strong media in Ireland at the moment?
I think that we have been blessed insofar as the commitment and continuing interest of Irish people traditionally to reading and watching and listening to our media, whether that's the local radio station or the regional papers or the nationals, national broadcaster. I think that has protected us perhaps longer than some of the other marketplaces. I think there's a strong loyalty there. And I think now what we're finding is, not just in Ireland, but globally, that the fight back and push back against fake news, disinformation, misinformation actually provides an opportunity both for traditional media and independent media to be open to a new audience. We are seeing younger people now who are willing to subscribe to media groups. They are willing to donate, let's say, if you take the case of The Guardian in the UK. And part and parcel is that because they are very much aware of the way in which fake news and disinformation can skew what's going on in the world.
What impact do you think the changes in the media industry are having on the PR industry?
Well, as we mentioned, media relations will always be important, but it is taking up less time. There's a lot more focus now on having PR support, whether that's in-house or in consultancy, who are also dedicated to keeping an eye on all of the other channels that might be out there, so social or digital media. And that's a very direct line of communication to stakeholders. I think there's also a recognition that in terms of what PR people do on a day-to-day basis, we're moving away from measuring and evaluating our work in terms of good old-fashioned press coverage, you know, column centimetres or moments of broadcast. And instead, what we're looking at is outcomes. So if an organisation has an objective, whether that's to raise funds, let's say if it's a charity, or whether it's to sell a product, or whether it's to work with a local community on a particular infrastructural project, whatever it is, the PR people now are much more focused on the outcome. Did that project actually come to fruition? Were stakeholders brought along? Was it done in a constructive and cooperative manner? Much more so than being judged every day by a client or employer on the basis of what coverage did you get.
And are clients now going to PR people saying, I want to go viral on social media, as opposed to I want to be on the front page of the Sunday Business Post or the Irish Times or the Irish Independent or whatever it is?
I think clients and those working in-house are much more media literate now. I mean, when I started out, certainly that would have been the kind of demand, never mind request, that you might get. But clients are much more sophisticated now in their understanding. They're much more willing to listen to counsel, to advice, and they're much more aware of the fact that in any engagement with the media, they have got to be prepared to be open and transparent, and that it's not a one-way flow. So if they have something they want to get out there, they also have to be prepared for the fact that people will have questions, and they need to be responsive to those questions. And if, for example, they're pushing to be, to use the phrase, viral online, well, then they may welcome the day when they'll be viral online in another way as well. Because being that active online requires a huge amount of human resources. People think that digital campaigns, online campaigns, well, they're inexpensive compared to other ways of doing things. But actually, they're not inexpensive, because if you're in that space, so to speak, you need to be monitoring what's going on. You need to be responsive. We've seen a huge growth now, I'm sure you're aware, of customer complaint via Twitter. And oftentimes it falls to the PR people to be monitoring that kind of feedback.
How important is corporate social responsibility as a function of PR now? Because that's also outward looking, but it is becoming more and more, well, I see it anyway, coming in from pitches from PR people about, you know, this company is doing this for this charity. Why is that, and how has that grown?
Yes, it's interesting. Corporate social responsibility seems to be having something of a renaissance. It had kind of fallen out of fashion, so to speak, maybe a decade ago. But what we're seeing now, and again, not just in Ireland, but globally, is there's a lot of demand from stakeholders, in particular from consumers, to see the corporates that they engage with engaging with societal issues, with societal problems, with the community on a local level. And that seems to be what's driving a lot of the corporate social responsibility. So corporates are very aware now that they cannot presume to be in a marketplace and forget that there are humans in that marketplace who are living and loving and rearing their kids, and they want to see responsibility from those corporates that are in their space. We're hearing a lot of talk in the recent past, the term CEO as activist is coming into phrase. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on boards of directors and CEOs. And it's also going to create a new demand on public relations advisors, because it's a very sensitive area and it needs to be approached very carefully. One person's social movement is another person's ideology. One might support corporate taking a stance, let's say, for example, in housing. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily and universally accepted by all of the stakeholders that corporate's engaged with.
Do Do you think that that drive for corporate social responsibility is coming from millennials? Because we hear a lot about millennials being more socially conscious and more active, and you know they care about the environment, and that's what all the research is telling us. So is that where that is coming from? Or is it that maybe companies just have a bit more cash now, the recession is over, and you know things are going well again for a lot of them?
I think a lot of it is coming as a push from the millennials. The research says that they're much more committed to the identities, their own identities and the identities of the brands that they want to be associated with. You can see it, for example, in the recent case with Nike, where they made a decision which was driven by what they knew about what would respond, what their customers would respond well to. Immediately they took a hit on the stock exchange. Ultimately, they rebounded. There's a company who knows their customer base very well, and they knew
and have very brave communications teams.
Well, actually, I heard that being discussed recently, and a lot of people were using the term brave. And then I heard one commentator say, not brave, they knew their customers.
Mm.
And because they knew their customers so well, it wasn't actually brave. It was kind of a no-brainer for them. But looking at it from the outside, certainly from this distance, we might see it as brave. But there's many other different ways in which CEOs can be engaged in the community and in which corporates can be. And if you think about it, as they say, if you fail to learn from history, repeat the failures. If you think back to the good old days where you had large brands like, say, Cadbury's or indeed Guinness, who were completely involved in the local community. You know, hospitals used to have housing for their staff on site. Hotels did. The breweries did. The larger manufacturers did. The Erden back in the old days, with the old railway cottages. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And it was being done then. Investment, for example, by philanthropy in galleries, in libraries, institutions, university buildings. That's all part of corporate social responsibility. It was ever thus to a certain extent. But yes, I think the millennials are driving it today.
There's a lot of talk these days about getting a chief marketing officer on the board. Is public relations valued at a board level these days, do you think?
Increasingly so. It's increasingly recognised that you need to have communications expertise as a part of the management function, that it is a large added value for any management group. Others use the expression, you know, that communications needs to be in the C-suite, to use the American term. That is growing, but we would argue, and the Institute will continue to advocate for more of that. Only recently, we saw the public appointments service starting to include communications capacity and expertise and knowledge and skills in the criteria that they were endorsing in terms of those who were looking, for example, to join state bodies or state boards. If you think about it, if and when there's a crisis, now, whether that crisis is caused by the bad weather, or it's caused by system failure, human failure, terrorism, whatever. And if you think about who is going to be called first, it's going to be the communications person. It's not going to be the legal team or the lawyer, because all they'll say is, well, this could end up in court in a few months or a year's time. That's not use right then. There's not much point calling the chief financial officer, because they will cry about the amount it's going to cost to put things right, and again, that's not going to help there and then. So very often, after the health and safety people and the emergency people, it's the communications people, and they have to have the knowledge of the organization, and they have to have the authority at the highest level to be able to respond and do what's necessary and do it as quickly as possible. And that, I think, is a good instance of who's important on a senior management team. It's the people that you need when things aren't going right.
And so far we've spoken a lot about the external roles of PR professionals in companies, but what about internal communications? Is that becoming more important as we see the unemployment rate has really dropped in Ireland, which is great, but it makes it harder and harder for companies to hire talent. So are they focused on internal communications as a way of employer branding and staff retention?
Interesting you should say that, because we are seeing in our own membership that internal comms or internal communications is a growth area for those who are providing it through their consultancies, and also that recruitment is up in terms of internal communications teams, whether that's in the public or in the private sector. And I think you've actually absolutely put your finger on it. Part of that is because in the current marketplace, pressure is on the employers to retain the good talent and to grow it and nurture it, and not to lose it to their competitors, or also lose it to people who decide, actually, times are pretty good, jobs market's great, things are pretty good globally, I'll go off and I'll do a bit of travelling, I'll work for a while in Canada, the States, Europe, wherever. So internal communications around keeping good lines of communication and ensuring that people want to work where they are is a big part of where we see the growth. That and what you mentioned earlier, the whole issue around corporate reputation and CSR, they're the growth areas in Ireland and also, I've noticed, across Europe.
Is it a challenge for PR agencies to retain staff, you know, pay them higher wages because that's what they're demanding in a market such as the one we're in, while also meeting the needs of clients and what they're looking for budget-wise?
Absolutely. I would say if you were to ask, I know because I talk to them every day, when you ask one of our members what is sort of the biggest challenge that they have at the moment, it is about retaining their staff. It's about particularly trying to recruit around the middle management level, so account manager level, somebody that has, say, 6-7 years experience. There seems to be a dearth out there at the moment.
Is that because those people weren't hired during the recession because everyone was cutting back?
I would speculate that it is, but I don't have proof of that. Mm. Now, interestingly, I'm delighted to say that in the next few months, the PR Institute, for the first time, is going to be doing a major nationwide research study of our industry and of the profession. You might call it a census, if you will, so that we can find out exactly who is out there. We want to know age mix, gender mix. We want to know credential backgrounds. We want to know the areas they're working in, in-house, consultancy, public, private. We want to get a really good map of who's working in the public relations and communications field. And I think that piece of research, amongst other things, might answer that question as to why that particular slot, shall we say, or category is difficult to fill.
I'm sure that'll be very interesting. I know IAPI do it for the advertising industry, and it's always interesting to see what stats they come up with and then how they compare with other years. We have, now this has happened for, you know, as long as journalism and PR have been a thing, journalists have gone into PR. But there's been a lot of high profile journalists over the last year or so who've made the move into PR. Do you think that that is a good thing? Are those skills properly transferable from journalism into PR, or are there issues that build up because there's a perception of what PR is, and then when people get into the industry, it's very different?
Well, it's interesting that we should be talking about that, because as you know, just last week we had our national conference and we were celebrating our 65th anniversary. And sort of anorak that I am, I had an enjoyable afternoon going through all of the old newsletters going back to the 1950s when the Institute was established. And
see, there's some real treats in there.
Oh, there was. And you know, if I was let at it, I would have spent much longer. But what struck me was the common themes that they were talking about, you know, around the PR Institute Council table back in the 1950s and today. And guess what one of them was?
Journalists going into PR.
Journalists moving into PR. Now, all of the early crew, let's say the likes of our founder, Ned Lawler, and Captain Miller and others, they were in the first instance journalists who had moved into public relations. And over the decades, you can see people moving backwards and forwards indeed. And so you see it today. And there's always been that little bit of tension there. Myself, I would say that there's a lot of transferable skills between journalism and PR, because, and again, it's a recurring theme, no matter what new technologies or platforms or global demands there are, ultimately a public relations person has got to be able to communicate well and to write purposefully. And journalists know how to do that.
For the most part.
You can say that, I couldn't comment. But what I would also say is it is interesting when you meet those who've recently moved, the way in which the scales have fallen from their eyes and they realise how long, how hard and how intense the work of a public relations person is. And going back to where we started, how diverse the work is, and that
it's not just about writing press releases.
So I think there's scope for other skills maybe to be added on, and that's something that we do at the Institute. We have a diploma in PR, which we've had for many years. We have it in-house now, and we're seeing that students on that are by and large postgraduates, people who are in work. They're either early career or they want to transfer into PR, or build up their credentials. And that provides the kind of skills that perhaps somebody who's been working in the media mightn't quite have. The breadth of skills, should I say. And they'll always have the advantage of having the writing skills and indeed the context.
Alan Cox of CORE has advocated for a professional standard in marketing, similar to what would be in the accountancy industry, we'll say. Do you think that PR should have something like that?
Well, I suppose one of the differences between marketing and public relations, and I mean, I'm all for regulation and I'm all for standards. That's one of my hobby horses. You know, if I have a single goal during my time at the Institute, it's to work on increasing the professionalism of our profession. But one of the complexities with his idea for us is marketing is directed specifically and only at one stakeholder group, the consumer. And they do a very good job at it. Indeed, advertising, it's the same. They're focused on the consumer. But as we've been talking about here today, the stakeholders that public relations people are responsible for range from the local community, where maybe your factory is, or it could be the local authorities, it could be TDs, it could be trade unions, it could be the employee group, it could be the media, it could be regulatory bodies here or in the EU. There is literally a huge range of stakeholders that we engage with. And some of the work we do, and in my opinion, some of the best work we do, is sit and listen to people. Now, how do you put in place a professional standard for something like that, that kind of relationship development?
So it's more of an art than a science.
I think what's really important about public relations, the clue is in the title. Public, think human. Mm. Relations, think relationships. You mentioned I did my PhD in sociology. I thought in doing sociology, I was moving very far away from the world of communications, only to discover that sociology is basically all about communications.
Study of humans, isn't it?
And you'd think I'd have copped that, having worked in public relations. So I think that, you know, if it's possible to do, I think it would be worthwhile embracing. There's many different ways in which we do have standards, whether it's codes of ethics, whether, for example, it's the lobbying regulation. I mean, tomorrow I'll be at the launch of the new code of conduct that the standards in public office are bringing out. The lobbying regulation is just one that our members ascribe to. They have other codes of ethics. Our colleagues in the PRCA, they must now, it's mandatory, that they have the consultancy management standard, which is put in place and examined by auditors. So there's lots of different ways in which we are regulated and in which we are measured, and there's no issue with any of that. I suppose ultimately, if it comes down to performance, that's going to be decided by the client, and it's going to be decided by the employer if you're working in-house. At the moment, they're the ones who measure us.
You mentioned the lobbying register there. Does it work, or does it negatively impact those who are working in PR as opposed to other people in industries that also have to adhere to it?
Well, we know from working with Sherry Perot, who's the head there, that actually it's working very well. No, we know it from her side. That's good to know. She has complimented members of the Public Relations Institute and the PRCA as two groups who are very responsive to the legislation, who fill in the registers on time and well with the correct information. And by and large, we would say that we are very much in favour and supportive of the regulation. If we had any concern, it continues to be that while we've done a lot of work in the PRI and PRCA with our members, and they've responded well to that, there are other groups out there who continue to be engaged in lobbying and either consciously or unconsciously don't recognise or indeed register the fact that they are. Now, that could be because they don't understand the regulations, or it could be that at the moment they're staying under the radar. But we were very pleased just last week to hear from Sherry Perot that they are starting to do a lot of outreach work now with, for example, organisations large and small who might be engaged in communications with or lobbying local authorities and not realise it. Interestingly, if you look at where the most work is being registered, it's within the Dublin area. But we know that, you know, there's lots of activity that goes on outside of Dublin, but in the regions there's much less engagement with the regulation. Now that'll change, I'm sure, as the years go by. But by and large, we would see the lobbying regulation as a positive thing for the industry. No issues. I've never heard a member complain about it, only insofar as they feel that they're adhering to all of it, and yet there are some groups out there who appear not to be.
Now, you've been in the role at the PRI for just over a year now. What are your key priorities? You mentioned education. Are there other things that you're hoping to achieve during your tenure?
Yes, education is, unsurprisingly, if you look at my background, I was always, long before I went back to do the PhD, personally committed to continuous professional development. I could never understand how I could expect to progress and be promoted if I wasn't investing in being better at what I was doing. And Lord knows we work in a very fast moving environment. So education is, the way I see it, is it's lifelong, it's career long. So I really like being involved in that in the Institute at every level. I suppose my first priority has to be the sustainability of the Institute itself. And that means paying a lot of attention to the governance of the Institute, making sure that the Institute is run well by and for its members. I've mentioned already increasing the professionalism of the membership. A lot of that is tied up with briefings and providing thought leaderships and education. But I also have, I believe, an important role, and it's a role I take on gladly, of advocating the value and contribution that public relations makes to economic, social, cultural and political development in Ireland. And you can see that going back over the 65 years of the Institute. If you go back to the very first PR gig in Ireland, it was actually the building of Ardna Crusha for the ESB. And because of the great work that was done there in engaging the entire population, including the diaspora, remember now, this is before email and this is before RTE, in fact, it was before RTE radio almost. Because of that, when rural electrification happened 30 odd years later, everyone was delighted to have the electricity coming. Now, if you think about that as the start of kind of modern history, and the growth in our economy and our burgeoning independence and all of that, there isn't really any brand or organisation, whether it's a local GA club or whether it's a mega agribusiness company, that has actually got where it is today without having paid attention to public relations. So I think we need to lift our heads out of our clients' work from time to time and just take a moment and go, do you know what? Actually, we do a lot of really valuable work. And I think we need to talk about that more because, you know, we haven't been great at doing PR on PR.
Which is a very good point. Clearly you have a lot of passion for the industry, Martina, but how or why did you end up in public relations?
Came up to Dublin. I'm from Galway originally. I came up to do the degree in communications in DCU many moons ago, and I came up to be a journalist, and I always wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to be a radio journalist.
Well, look at you now.
Fancied myself as the next Olivia Leary. And when we were working and studying, to be perfectly honest, I thought, God, journalism is a hell of a lot tougher. Tougher emotionally than I expected it to be. And I just thought, okay, I'm really going to have to brace myself now if this is how I want to make a living. And then because we did work experience, I got the opportunity to work in-house in the communications department of IBM. And I discovered, again, picking up on one of our themes earlier about transferable skills, I discovered that in public relations, I could continue to pursue all the things that I liked to do, which was writing and being with people and understanding people and getting to know about all sorts of different subjects. And I could do that as a PR person. And when I finished my degree, again, I was lucky enough to join Murray Consultants. And as they say, never looked back after that.
Is it a career you'd recommend to people?
Yes, absolutely. The always thing that comes into my mind is you will never be bored. You may be tired, you may be wrecked, but you'll never be bored. There's always something new happening. There's always some new challenge being put on your desk. You get to meet really interesting people from all sorts of walks of life, whether that's, you know, A-list celebrities on the glossy end, or it's the local GAA team, or it's the Irish Country Women's Association, or, you know, like, it is an amazing career. It's also, though, it is tough work, you know, it is. We have to be responsive 24/7. People don't realise that. We are on call 24/7 for our clients, 365 days a year. And to that extent, it can be very demanding, particularly, I feel, on those with families, young families. But in terms of if you love the media, if you love news, if you love politics, public affairs, you can follow your passion. I have friends who work solely in public relations in relation to sports and sponsorship, about which I know nothing, by the way, but they love it because they're at all of the events they'd like to be at anyway, although they're working with them and they're meeting their heroes. And then there are others who are equally delighted to be working in corporate communications, where they're meeting stockbrokers and financial analysts, and they're looking at the global trends and the FTSE 100 and all that kind of stuff, and they love it too. So there's something for everyone, I think, in the career.
Well, I think you PR'd PR very well there, Martina, so I think we should leave it there. That's all for this installment of the Media Matters podcast. Thanks so much to Dr. Martina Byrne of the PRRI for popping into studio, and thanks to you all for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please share Media Matters on your social media channels, rate us on iTunes, and subscribe. If you have feedback or any suggestions for future interviewees, tweet me on Colette_Sexton. Until next time!